The information
you're listening to Motivation and Muscle, the best podcast connecting your brain to your broad.
A substitute for medical advice.
The information contained here in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your broad.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is July 31st, 2014, and we're brought to you by and sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we don't try, we succeed. And today is Thursday, obviously the 31st, the last day of July, and on Thursdays we have our friend, Coach Rob Regish, is always here with us. And in case you don't know Rob, Rob is on many things, such as every Tuesday he's on Superhuman Radio with the Blueprint Power Hour. He's got the Blueprint Army. He's had, I know he just got done with a webinar, the Big Drink. I hope I'm saying that right, Rob.
Yeah.
And today we're going to talk about, well, I'm sure this is one of Rob's favorites too. I don't know how this wouldn't be anybody's favorite. We're going to talk about the big three, and they are the press, the squat, and the deadlift. Whatever order you want to put them in, that's fine with us. So today, we're going to have a good show. And Rob, welcome to the show. And, you know, obviously, as we always do in the beginning, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, where they can get a hold of you, and what you got coming up.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. You know, as Eric mentioned, I'm on every Tuesday on Superhuman Radio at noon. The name of the show is the Blueprint Power Hour, and I answer listener questions pretty much from all over the world. 30 years in the game, 20 years as a competitive power lifter, and more recently, I have authored 4 books, have a monthly newsletter, the Blueprint Bulletin, formulate for muscle and sports science, and very shortly, Predator Nutrition in the UK, sports supplements. And rolling out the Blueprint Army, which is a special member-only section on my website. So if you are interested, please do take a look. It's CoachRobRegish.com, and you can learn more about my products, publications, and the Blueprint Army promo that we have going on right now.
Hey, Rob, too, you know, for the sake of everybody out there, you are on Facebook, right? Obviously.
Yeah, you can find me there. You can just punch in Rob Regish or Coach Rob Regish, and you'll find me on Facebook.
Yep. So. Because we want everybody to be able to find you, no matter what, whether they go to your website or not. Obviously, today we're going to talk about the big three. Did you get everything in, Rob?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. We're going to talk about the big three, but we're going to talk about it from a standpoint of a beginner, pretty much. And what would be the questions of a beginner? You know, Rob and I have talked about this before. You know, wouldn't it have been nice if there was this type of material around when we started? Not only that, I mean, you know, like we said, you don't have the internet. I mean, obviously, we found out enough to be able to get to this stage in our lives, but it's nice to have authentic, you know, no holes barred type of material that, you know, if I go to it, I can bet that it's going to work and I'm not going to end up getting busted in pieces. So, Rob, what do you want? Where do we want to go first? Is there an exercise that you want to talk above the other two, or are we just fair game with anything here?
Well, you know, I think it's fair to start with why are we talking about the big three? You know, the press, the squat, and the deadlift, because when a typical trainee joins a gym these days, they're walking in to see just a myriad of different exercise machines and gadgets. And unfortunately, a very high percentage of them are isolation movements. For example, they're going to see the leg extension for the quads, the leg curl for the hamstrings. They're going to see the pec deck machine for their flies. The reason we're focusing on the big three is they are known as compound movements. And all that means is they work an incredible degree of muscle tissue in one movement. And that's important from a training economy perspective, because you only have so much time and energy to pour yourself into lifts. And these three are really fundamentals. And if you do want to perform stuff outside of these three, you know, you can branch off, but these three really need to be the centerpiece of your program.
Yeah, and you know, the nice thing about these three too, now if we take a 13-year-old young man, and you know, we could be talking just about high school right now if we wanted to. I mean, let's face it, their testosterone is peaking through them right now. I mean, it's literally dripping off them. When you get into things like presses and squats and deadlifts, this is not going to enhance your power. It's going to enhance your growth hormone. And let's face it, when you're that young of age where you don't have a lot of responsibilities and you can devote the time to answering, you know, the call on these three, you can make some really, really nice gains in strength, endurance. You're going to have power like you never felt before. And, you know, as Dr. Ken always said, you're going to be walking strong. So let's say, Rob, let's talk more, obviously, but let's even design a little program for a beginner. So if we're going to – well, obviously, they got to know how to do the stuff first. So if you were or I were that age – how would you approach this? I mean, I know that I'd go looking for somebody that was doing these movements if you could find them and obviously learn, but what would your approach be to this then?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I'm going to use the bench press as an example, just simply because, you know, guys, a lot of guys, that's how they measure themselves against mm-hmm. other gym members. But the bench is, form is very critical on all three lifts, but in particular on the bench, because you see a lot of beginners make the following mistakes. First, you're going to see their feet fly out or move around while they're benching. The reality is a lot of the power comes from your feet. They should either be tucked and in contact with the ground, or some guys have them out and, you know, perfectly flat. Personally, I tuck it. Second, you're going to want to have a healthy arch, which is to say, you know, you're arching your back so that your shoulders are pulled back and almost squeezing into the bench. And third, a lot of beginners bounce the bar off the chest. Okay. And this is really robbing yourself of a lot of power. And I made that mistake, I'll be honest. One of the biggest breakthroughs, and I'll never forget how fast I got much stronger. I paused the weight for 2 seconds on my chest, which was important later on because that's what they make you do in competition.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then drove the bar up. Now, speaking of driving the bar up, there's an optimal lockout position that everyone has, and it can be difficult, especially for a beginner, to find that. But there's an easy diagnostic that I came up with that will really help you. Take an empty bar, and you lie on a free bench, and hold the bar at arm's length with your normal bench press grip. And I want you to slowly move that bar in an arc at arm's length from a point below your waist to a point below your head. Move it back and forth, move it back and forth in that arc. At some point, you will reach a point in that arc where the bar feels virtually weightless. Presto. That is where the bar should wind up when you lock out. And, you know, when guys miss the bench, unfortunately, it's typically on the lockout. And that goes back to, a lot of reasons. You know, they're not working the tries hard enough. The bar isn't moving fast enough, but by and large, an inch either way can make or break you. And that's the way to find your optimal lockout position. But beyond that, guys, practice with that bar. Practice, practice, practice. drive the shoulder blades into the bench, get the chest high off the bench, feet in contact with the ground, glutes in contact with the bench, and neck. I see a lot of guys squirming. If you're squirming like that, you're losing a lot of power. The final tip I'll drop is this. I've seen a lot of guys, when they grasp the bar, they do so with that kind of motorcycle. I'll call it the motorcycle grip. And that's where the wrists are cocked back. So the bar is a good, I don't know, inch or two behind the wrist. When you grab that bar, it should be perfectly aligned or very close with your wrist and your elbow. You generate a lot more power when you're benching that way.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, I mean, I'm sure you've seen plenty. I can remember when I was in a gym, I used to laugh. Now, think about how foolish this is. These guys would be bench pressing and they'd have their feet up on the bench. And I'm like, you plan on falling over on the side? Because you know that's going to happen. You know, I mean, no balance, you know, you should know better. And, you know, these are the things that you see in these places. And how's a guy that's 13 years old or 15 years old or whatever going to be like, all right, well, you know, that's the road to injury, in my opinion. Now, obviously, the bench press, when done correctly, is a super movement. But that's been bastardized, too, over probably the last 40 years. One thing I always love to do, I do it a little different. I do a floor press now. Basically, I lay on my platform, and, you know, I'm not suggesting this is better or whatever. I do things, everything dead stop. I like doing that because I just like just grinding my back right through the platform and pushing right out. But one of the main movements I've always loved was to press overhead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, there's nothing like, you know, you get a pair of squat stands or you want a power clean, which is going to limit you. If you want to build true power for, you know, and take a few years doing it, power clean and press it, you know, push press it if you want. But I always like doing two things, and I do a number of things here, is this. You know, you set your squat stands up, obviously, and, you know, make sure you got good squat stands. You don't want anything that's wiggling around or moving around because, I mean, basically, you know, that could be a catastrophe if you've got to, you know, lay that bar down on that. But that, you know, coming out, 1-2, push. You know, whether you do a little leg whip or not with it. We have a thing here called the Viking press. You know, as Rob and I have talked in the past, I like dead stop stuff. You know, I'll Viking press out of my power rack. It was a special implement made to do that. They do that in World's Strongest Man. And then, once again, I love doing it. And I got this mainly from reading about Grimmick and Bob Boone and all those guys back in the day where they said, and I believe it, you know, Grimmick was always work the top of your press, dead stop, work it out of the power rack. You know, especially York was getting real big and Bob Hoffman, you know, with the power rack and all that stuff. But I believe back in his era, they were probably doing out of wood, off big hunks of wood or something like that. Well, I had read and I had heard this a few times that John Grimmick did a lockout with 1,000 pounds overhead.
Yeah, I'd heard that too.
That's insane, Rob. And Why don't we discuss this a little bit, your feelings on overhead, you know, musculature-wise, how it works you from head to toe. Obviously, you've had experience with this. So why don't we talk about that a little bit, what your feelings are overhead, you know, whether it's a clean with a log, whatever. What do you feel benefit-wise from overhead? What does that give you?
Well, I think it builds just a tremendous amount of raw power. That even the bench press does not. And it's a shame because back in the day, before the bench press became popular, you know, the standing overhead press was really the measure of a man's, not just upper body strength, but in some respects, his total body strength. Yep. I will never forget tracking down and speaking with Ken Patera.
Oh, cool.
The first man in history, military press, 500 pounds over his head. You know, it is, like I said, a forgotten gem from a past time. And there's something to be said for when you press the weight overhead, when you're standing like that, it builds gorilla strength versus the bench press while you're laying down. And this goes for the other two movements we'll discuss today, the squat and the deadlift. When you are pulling, squatting, and pressing, and you're standing on 2 feet, it builds just an incredible amount of raw gorilla pick-up-and-throw people type strength.
Yeah, you're right on the money with that, because think about this. How much are you doing laying on your back for strength? I mean, and it's nothing against the bench press. I think the bench press is a great movement, but it's been tinkered with a little bit too much. And I think, that's one of the things that really hurt Olympic lifting too. I mean, I kind of lost it. Look at the clean and jerk. Most people argue is probably the king movement out there. I don't know. There's pros and cons, but you got to be pretty damn strong to pull that off. But, you know, when they got rid of the press, that kind of lost it for me with Olympic lifting. And I respect those athletes because, I mean, those guys and women are pretty serious stuff. But, you know, like Rob was saying, it's really the true measure of a man. I mean, to be able to get that bar up over your head and stand there. Rob, before I shift right back to you, I think I might have even said this to you before. I'll never forget the picture, and I think I still got it somewhere, of my hero, Paul Anderson, on Muscle Beach.
Oh, yeah.
And there's Paul in his regular black, and he might have even had dress pants on there. And I was talking to Roger the other day because, you know, he worked for York all those years. And I'll never forget that. There he is on the beach, and there's 450 sitting in the stands, squat stands. And all these guys around him.
You're listening to Motivation and Muscle, the best podcast connecting your brain to your brawn.
And it looks like just a bunch of wild men there, man. And they're all standing there by the wall and everything. There's Paul Anderson standing there, bolt upright with that weight over his head. And I'm here to tell you, man, that guy looked like somebody nailed him right to the ground. And it's like things like that, you know, it like you said, it builds such a big power, gorilla strength, you know. So let's even go bigger with this. I mean, you know, obviously that's the picture I gave you. I mean, what do you think here? I mean, how would we proceed then?
The next point I want to drive home is the loading. You know, what sets and reps, because there are tons of different programs out there today, but the best, absolute best, in my opinion, for a beginner is Bill Starr's 5 sets of 5.
I knew you were going to say that.
You know?
That is.
It,
yep.
It hits the sweet spot for 99.9% of people in terms of both the amount of weight that they can use and the volume. So if you think about it, you can't bench too heavy too often, because too much work done in the 90th percentile, 1 to 3 reps per se, your central nervous system is going to burn out. Conversely, high reps really aren't going to do anything for your max strength. You can progress a long time on 5 sets of 5, either by adding weights on the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth sets, reducing rest periods, whatever it may be, but go with 5 sets of 5. You know, it's a slam dunk. The other point I want to make is this. A lot of shoulder injuries and imbalances result from guys that are overzealous in their pressing, be it standing presses or the bench press, more often the bench press. And that is simply because an equal amount of rowing and pulling is not done. And there's a very easy way to incorporate that. You can do your set of bench presses, let's say your first set of 5. As soon as you're done, head on over and do some one-arm dumbbell rows for a set of 5. And then commence your rest period, 3 to 5 minutes if you're training heavy. What this does is it ensures that the back, but in particular the rear delts, get just as much work and attention as the front delts. And in any gym across the country, shoulder injuries are always number one. That's a great way of balancing your upper body. And as a bonus, I talked before about driving the shoulder blades in, you know, into the bench. If you think about it, the bigger and thicker the back that you have, the less distance that bar has to travel. Mm-hmm. You know, I once went to meet Ted Arcidi with a guy that had already met him once, and he said, "Wait till you see him. He's got a back you could have a picnic on." You know, I thought he was exaggerating until I got there and saw him. You know, his back was every bit as impressive as his delts and his chest. So, five sets of five, and for every rep and set of pressing, make sure you're doing an equal amount of rows.
Yeah, because you can't beat, you know, having those lats. I mean, they come in mighty vital for everything. You know, pressing, you know, pressing and back, the aesthetics too. I mean, what looks better? I remember there was a guy who started us all out, Craig Morrison, and he had a, you know, he's quite a bit older than us, but he was a, you know, he competed in bodybuilding back in the 60s and all that. But boy, this guy was just built to the hilt. And I can remember, you know, he was a big dumbbell presser. I mean, big. And nothing looks better. I don't think people realize it, that, you know, like you said about Ted Arcidi. I don't know if you remember a guy named Chuck Ahrens. He was he would always wear long sleeve shirts to train, and he was back in the 60s era. There was a couple articles out in Milo, and man, the stuff this guy used to do with dumbbells would blow your mind. I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of pounds this guy could press at all different levels. You know, I've never seen a delt like that. And the nice thing about what we're talking about here is you can put on a pair of delts and an upper back. I mean, let's face it, your back's going to get hit anyways. But doing just those two movements aesthetically, I mean, all I could tell you is get ready to start buying new clothes, because nothing you got is going to fit you 3 months down the road, you know, Rob?
Yeah, yeah. And really, I guess that you talk about aesthetics. There are a lot of guys that look big, strong, and impressive from the front.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ever want to know how strong a guy really is, look at him from the side.
Yep.
If he is thick and he has a big back, hamstrings, traps especially, that's one horse right there.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a show horse. You know, he's a workhorse.
He's a Clydesdale, man.
Yeah. And beyond that, he's going to be a lot less prone to injury. You want to talk about how a back makes you look just intimidating. Take a look at Brock Lesnar sometime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Brock's got one of the best backs in the business. But even when he broke in at age 19, I want to say, in professional wrestling, which is just, you can think what you want about it, but it's loaded with some physical specimens.
Absolutely.
He stood out because of his thickness. And a lot of that went back to his back and his traps.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, when you turn this side, you know, you can see these guys. I mean, we used to call this one guy, he had a huge upper body. We used to call him chicken legs.
Yeah.
He knew he didn't want to squat, but you look, you know what you can really tell? You know, when you look from the side, I mean, someone that's really been doing stuff, those hamstrings, like that split between the legs, you know, with the front and then the back. I mean, anybody that's got that, and of course, everything looks like it attaches to your hind end anyways. So you're going to look at this guy or gal, and you're going to be like, wow, you know, they've been in the weight room. They've been squatting, you know, which I guess if we're done with the pressing so much, we can lead right into the squat.
Yeah, great segue.
that was by accident. Well, you know, let's face it. I don't know what you like the best. It's hard to pick a winner out of three of them. But like I said to Frank the other day, who was on the show, if you came to me and said you only can do one movement the rest of your life, I can tell you without a doubt it'd be the squat, whether it's rear, front, hip, belt, I don't care what you want to call it. I think with me, and it's somewhat with the press too. I mean, everything's got its goods. There's no bad with any of them unless you don't know how to do it. I'm just one of those guys that likes something laying on them, yeah. You know, where you got to kind of fight it a little bit, where it's pushing you down, trying to put you through the floor. And either, you know, you're going to be in a safety rack anyways, I would hope, or you better have damn good spotters. But there's just something about the feeling of I got to support this. And I know that we've talked about the loading of the spine and all that, but for me, it makes me so aggressive, man. Whether pass or fail, I don't really consider anything a failure. Maybe we call it a small isometric. But you know what I mean, Rob? It's like if I came to you and said you can only do one of the three, what would you go with?
Personally, I picked the deadlift. But
okay,
but you know, we're
talking. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'll explain why when we get there. But you know, with respect to the squat, what you're talking about. Is it gets back to something called NMA, or neuromuscular activation. Mm-hmm. When you're on the leg extension and you get to the 10th rep and you can't get an 11th, what happens? Whole bunch of nothing. You lower the weight, you get off, and you go get a drink. Now, conversely, if you go down on rep 10 in a squat, mm-hmm. and you can't come back up, you're either one, dead, or two, you know, or two, seriously injured.
You're right.
And your brain knows this. So it's a great example of what I call a level 7 movement. And I won't go through all 7 levels, but a level 7 movement is where you're moving the body and the weight through space. And it is during that time that it registers most acutely with your brain. It's part of the reason why you can lift a ton more weight on the leg press, plug the numbers into a total tonnage formula versus a squat. And on paper, the leg press is far superior. But in the real world, who grows more muscle?
Right.
The guy squatting. The other thing I'll say is this. If you're starting out squatting, try not to overthink it on the form, because the fact is, most people squat down on a toilet seat better than they do when they're squat. Something about putting the bar on their back causes them to, it's just there are so many things that can go wrong. The easiest and fastest way to learn is to box squat, in my opinion. And that's because it auto-corrects so many of the form errors that that people new to it fall victim to. And I'm talking about, one, not going down far enough. Two, bouncing out of the bottom. Three, their knees will buckle inward. Four, they're going to lean forward excessively. Now, these are all things that people new to the squat, unfortunately, are going to fall victim to. When you box squat, especially with a wide stance, it will teach you the correct depth, right? If you're going down to parallel, at least, it'll build tremendous strength out of the hole, and it will prevent you from the knees tracking inward. Which is just, it's a recipe for a disaster. And once you learn to pop the hips through when you come up to complete the lift, it prevents that leaning forward that you see a lot of high bar squatters with narrow stances do. So that's my two cents on the squat. Learn how to box squat. Elite FTS, Dave Tate's site. Yep. Has just some excellent instructional videos on box squatting.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it to learn correctly. I mean, what you learn when you do things young, I mean, that's going to carry you through unless you end up, you know, disabling yourself doing something that you shouldn't be doing. The thing I like about all of these lifts is the raw power aspect of it. And you know, we were talking about neuromuscular, and there's just something about these movements that just set you as an individual apart from these other guys that, you know, maybe they're doing a leg press or they're sitting doing 10,000 barbell curls or, you know, preacher curls and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, this goes along with a lot of the thing called, you know, guts too, because when you're out, when you're messing around with a bar, whether you're pressing or squatting or deadlifting, I mean, this is hard physical work. And you've got to be set up mentally to do this too. And this, and you know, you and I both know, this stuff will test you mentally very quickly. And when you're putting a load on yourself, let's forget about all the outside surroundings, whether it's weather, you know, maybe you've had an argument with your girlfriend and you're all flipped out or whatever's going on in your life, man. These things have no mercy. I mean, the weights have no mercy on you. And it's like, you know, they don't care if they get moved or not, and they don't care if they break you either. So there's a component there where the big three here are going to have a lasting mental effect on you too. And obviously, you can go at it any way you want. You can make excuses. You can say, oh, they just didn't work for me or whatever. But you know something? There's nothing out there that's going to pay off the way these three are. And when you can gain mentally from physically, and I guess vice versa, I guess the two handshake anyways, this is the kind of program I'd put somebody on that was, say, 13 years old. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, you know, the fundamentals, and I consider these three lifts fundamental. Learning these three early are probably the biggest and best gift you can give to a youngster, because it is from these three that they will learn the supplemental movements and variations of such, and they won't waste half their training life doing things like, you know, dumbbell tricep kickbacks.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And endless sets of bicep curls. And the reality is, if you're working hard on pressing, be it the bench press or the overhead press, squatting and deadlifting, your buys and tries are going to grow and like crazy. And I'll also say this. There was an old timer that told me once, he said, you want to get your arms to grow? He said, squat. and damned if he was right.
I just think if we had the big drink then.
Yeah.
It's like, and you know, the nice thing about that, you know, you want to get bigger. I mean, obviously, we're going to get in a deadlift shortly, and that's Rob's lift and on the squat. But I'll tell you what, too. I mean, you want to get bigger, you know, and I'm not saying put on weight for the sake of putting weight on. Put it on that's going to be usable. And if you get a little fat on you, so what? You know, it's not going to be the end of the world because, believe me, it's going to be very hard unless you're some kind of genetic guy or you're taking drugs of some sort, you know, where you're not going to have blocks in the abdominal area. You might have a good flat stomach, but, you know, that's all diet. I don't care what anybody says. But, you know, when I love to hear everybody saying, oh, core. I never call it that. I always call it midsection. I like the old school way. You want to have midsection strength, press overhead, stand there with a big weight on your shoulder for time. And then obviously Rob likes to always do the static holds. I mean, come on. Do you know what your abdominals are doing that whole time? They're working like no tomorrow to stabilize you. So the next time somebody tells you go and do crunches, you know, look at them like, okay, and then go back and do what you're doing. Right, Rob?
Yeah. You know, it's as we said at the top of the show, these are compound movements, and they work the entire body. And to your point, the abs get a hell of a workout too. So,
without a doubt. I mean, and you know something? Let's face it. Most people don't like doing abdominals. I mean, you know, look, I'll do a few of warm up, but most of my abdominal work is done in that power rack. That's where mine's all done. Do I have ripped abs? No. Do I really care? No, I don't. Because you know what I want to do? I want to be functionally strong every day. I don't want to be just strong inside my gym. I want to be able to walk down the street and be strong. And no matter what happens, I can answer the call. You know, there's a lot of people that are paper tigers that walk around, you know, wearing shirts that are like two or three sizes too small on them. You know what I mean? And they're walking around like they're going to just break your neck the way they look at you. It's like, I've seen so many of these guys getting shit with people and they get their clocks cleaned, man. So I think that these movements not only build you, build your character, build you mentally as far as having confidence, but when done correctly, you can be a force outside of the gym. And I'm not talking a force of being a bully, but if something should arise, you know, maybe somebody needs some help, or maybe someone is foolish enough to try you out. I think that's very important today. So with that, let's slide right into the deadlift and let's talk about some big pulls. And obviously tell me and everybody why the deadlift is your lift, Rob.
Well, I'll tell you, for me, part of it was I was able to pull a lot at a very young age. You know, at 19, I was pulling 585, 600.
Whoa.
Wow. So it was cool because I can remember in college, you know, the whole weight room would stop just to see if you could get it. Now, those days are long gone because of my back. But the reason why I like the deadlift so much is it works a tremendous amount of muscle mass. I feel even more so than the squat. It engages mm-hmm. The back more. And it's worth noting, of the three lifts we're discussing, on the first rep at least, it's a concentric, right? It's a concentric yep. lift. You're not starting the lift by lowering the bar.
Right.
You're starting the lift by pulling it off the ground.
Yep.
So having said that, it takes the most out of you, in my opinion, out of all three of those lifts. And I think a lot of that goes back to how much muscle mass is worth. But much the same as we talked about in squatting, learning proper form on the deadlift is even more important mm-hmm. because of the damage that can be done to the back. And essentially, you've got two stances to choose from. Traditional, where the feet are close together and, you know, the arms are outside the feet, grasping the bar. Or the sumo deadlift, where the feet are spread wide, mm-hmm. the hands grasp the bar and the inside of the feet. Of the two, I favor the sumo for a couple of reasons. One, if you think about it, the bar has less of a distance to travel, right?
Correct.
And two, it does not stress the lower back to the same degree as a close stance deadlift. And you can prove this to yourself with the following little experiment. Stand with your feet together and observe the pressure on your lower back and how much weight it's carrying. Now, you know, take a wide stance and observe how much less weight the lower back is carrying. So I would encourage you to use both to see. Everybody's going to have different leverage points and, you know, biomechanics, et cetera, et cetera. I would encourage you to try both, but the biggest pet peeve I have is make sure that bar stays close to you, as in you should have some bloody shins.
Yep.
You know, because
yeah.
If the bar starts to get out in front of you, not only are you losing a tremendous amount of power, but you're putting your lower back in a very compromising position. And proof of that is how many injuries there are just from, let's say shoveling snow.
Oh yeah.
You know, you couldn't devise a better way to hurt your back. Hey, let's take a heavy weight, put it at the end of a shovel far away from the body and twist. That's what you're going to throw it.
Yeah, that's recipe for lower back.
Yeah. So, again, I think five sets of five hits the sweet spot here. This is really a lift where you need to, in my opinion, you need to videotape yourself on all three, but in particular the deadlift.
Now, Rob, when you were powerlifting and even early on, did you do much sumo-style deadlifting, or was that just not a comfortable thing? I mean, if you were doing it, did you find that to be better, or was it the same, or were there pros and cons with it?
I was a conventional puller, believe it or not.
Okay.
I discovered the sumo out of necessity the first time I hurt my back, and it was a subluxation of L4 and L5, mm-hmm. which is to say, you know, I didn't slip a disc or anything, but the vertebrae twisted.
Yep.
Either clockwise or counterclockwise, it puts pressure on a nerve that runs the muscle. The muscle spasms to protect the joint, and it still
sure.
stays contracted. The dumb thing I did, which I don't want anybody to do and make this mistake, is I supersetted squats and deadlifts.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You know, and you read so many articles about that, Rob. It's like, oh, that's the best way to train both of them. I was like, why would you do two major movements like that in one night? Now, the only way I'd even say do it, one's got to be mid-range to lighter than that. You know, maybe it's 70%. And then the other one, you know, I guess you're going to work it at your 90%. But I never got that, and I've never trained the two lifts together.
It's ill-advised, you know, especially for somebody starting out. It is, to me, it's one or the other. You know, dedicate that day to either the squat or the deadlift, but please not both. The other thing is this, and again, why I so much, you know, I favor box squatting. You talk about the importance of having strong abs. Here again, the transference of power from the lower body into the upper body and vice versa runs through the abs.
Mm-hmm.
And when a lifter is successful in the deadlift, especially when he's using a heavy weight and he's nearing lockout, he's successful because he knows how to pop his hips through, right, and drive them mm-hmm. forward, which gets back to practicing that on the box squat. The box squat is also advantageous when you go to deadlift because if you're pausing on the box, it is static overcome by dynamic strength, meaning you're moving it from a dead stop on the box squat as you see in the deadlift.
Yeah, and it's just you're going to get carryover. I mean, complementing one another is the best way anyways. And, you know, I'm with you. I mean, save that back. You might want to lift for maybe 20, 30, 40 years of your life. And if that back's causing you problems, you're not going to do that. And I'll tell you one thing I hate is when you get sciatica.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And it always seems like any time I'll get it before I go to the chiropractor, it'll be just like you want to go to bed. And it's like you go to lay down and you'll feel that. And it's like, or if you're driving your car, nothing drives me crazier than having something like that. And, you know, that's all impingement. We know that. But, you know, and that can be caused by those two movements, too. So, you know, just be careful. And like Rob said, too, he doesn't suggest that. And I definitely don't. You know, whether you're going to squat maybe, say, on Monday and then 10 days later you're going to do your deadlifts. But you can't. I would never squat. I never would squat and deadlift in the same week. Never. Not unless you're going to do one very, very light.
Yeah, and that's good advice. The other thing is this. Of the three lifts that we have discussed, the deadlift takes the most out of your central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, it's tempting. when you're getting stronger from session to session to train it more frequently. But I have found a good rule of thumb is to train the deadlift or its variations 3 times a month. Like you had mentioned, yeah. You know, you got another session in 10 days. Of all the muscle groups, your lower back recovers the slowest.
Slowest, yeah.
So, you know, consider 3 sessions a month as a good starting point. And, you know, as you learn variations like the Romanian deadlift or deadlifting off of blocks or from a deficit to help with getting the bar off the floor, you know, these are things that you can devote entire sessions to.
Well, I like too with you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I like, you know, when we've talked about and you were talking big time about doing static holds too, you know, I mean, the benefits alone, the carryover, it's an incredible lift doing that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've spoken about 3 compound lifts today, 3 compound movements, and this is true for all 3, but I think it's the most important for the deadlift. Force equals mass times acceleration, which is to say most guys are just trying to add more weight to the bar. Mass. Very few are working on acceleration or moving the bar quickly. And of those 3 sessions during the month, I would highly suggest for each of these 3 movements, but in particular the deadlift, taking just say 50% of your 1 rep max and doing, you know, 8 sets of 2 or 10 sets of 2 and moving that bar as fast as possible. Now, as you progress, you can add bands to the bar for that speed work, and that makes you incredibly explosive, and it teaches you to be explosive and kind of power through and lock that deadlift out, because the further the band stretch, right, the greater the greater the tension. So,
and I'll tell you right now, Rob, just anybody that uses a power rack, I've done that many times. You know, I'll get bands, obviously, and I do like an X in them. And what I do is it's very easy to do. You put the rods right through it. You put the band in the back, stretch it over to the other side, you know, then you put your next rod through that, and you do the same. So you're going to have basically, it'll look like an X with 2 bands you're using. And I'm telling you right now, you pull that thing off the floor in the rack, or even if you're putting it on, you know, a rod or whatever to yank it off a little higher, and you hit those bands, I'll tell you, I've hit those things, and I've dropped the bar. You hit it so fast, and it, like, repels you right back down. So, without a doubt. You know what else I want to ask you, too, is this. And I think it's a very good bar. I use it on occasion. What do you think as far as a trap bar? You know, there's a lot of guys, I mean, I wish I could remember his name, who invented the trap bar. Huh. I can't think of his name right offhand. But he came out with a trap bar. He devastated his back. He was a power lifter, and that got him back to where he was pretty good again. What do you think about trap bars?
I think for the athlete that isn't competing, I would almost deadlift exclusively with a trap bar. And the reason for that is many. But, you know, you still get the same – you get all the benefits of the regular deadlift. But the injury – the risk of injury is brought way down because – the center of gravity is now you instead of, you know, the bar being up against your shins. The other great advantage to the trap bar is in a traditional deadlift, you're going to be, and most guys use a mixed grip, which is to say one hand overhand, the other hand, you know, palms up. I never had a problem with it, but I have seen guys rip their biceps off, and it looks like a lampshade coming up.
Yeah, I know.
Much better with the trap bar, especially if it has a pronated grip where the palms are facing each other. Mm-hmm. That's a much more friendly, and this goes for any lift, but that's a much more shoulder, elbow, and wrist friendly position especially for the deadlift, where you're lifting 2-3 times body weight when you get really strong.
Yeah, and I just thought of the guy's name too. That was Paul Kelso that
invented
the bar, because I want to give him his props. I've got a couple of them. I like them, but you know, see, this has nothing to do with the person starting out, but you know, when I'm lifting stones, I mean that's a front squat / deadlift right there.
Yeah.
And see where I have, and this will happen to anybody that gets into this stuff big time, is this: when you're training for a meet like that, where you're going to do something that's not conventional, that's another thing you got to really answer, is this: it's like, how am I going to mix in the deadlift with, say, I have to do a stone lift too? And you know, like Rob was saying, you know, maybe 3 times a month we want a deadlift. Well, maybe you substitute for the middle. So you deadlift the first day out. The second meeting, you do it, you know, you work the stone as heavy as you can. And the third one, you know, I have to walk it, so I can do like a combination of deadlift and then walk too. So, you know, this is what we're talking about. Be very careful with the lower back and the variations you're doing, because, you know, if you permanently injure your back, you're not, maybe you can lift, but you're not doing any of the heavy stuff anymore. So it's going to limit your press, it's going to limit your squat, and it's going to limit, you know, your deadlift, and it's going to limit everything else, because let's face it, if you're standing there and your lower back feels like someone's beating it with a hammer, you're not going to be able to be very productive. So, you know, like Rob said, we can't stress enough here how vital it is to learn how to, say, box squat. You know, learn how to press. Learn how to clean it off a rack properly. Learn how to set your body. But most of all, like Rob said, learn how to use that bar. Make that bar, that Olympic bar, your best friend. And don't worry about the weight, because, you know, it's like everything. The weight's going to come. But learn how to build the base. Once you have the base down, well, you know, the world's your oyster, as they say. So, you know, Rob, I think that's a good way to, you know, set everything up to be, you know, very successful.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of guys out there, unfortunately, that are not starting with a strong foundation, and you can't help with strong, start with a strong foundation with these three.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's
well, you know something too. It's the whole thing. You get the whole, you know, package. You get, number one, you learn how to do it. Number one. Number two, you get a hell of a lot stronger. Number three, you get to put on some size. Who doesn't want to have some good muscular size? Number four, out on the playground, as they call it, the street, you're going to be able to defend yourself. Or you might be able to help somebody that's in need. You know, you never know. In today's world, there's so much going on. And then, you know, the fifth thing is this. It's the completion of goals to, you know, maybe you want to go and power lift like Rob did. Or maybe you want to go to Iceland and lift the Husafell stone. All these things you're doing today are preparing you for years down the road. I mean, I don't know, you know, look at what Rob was deadlifting as a teenager. I mean, the guy's deadlifting 600 pounds almost. I mean, that is outstanding. When I started doing this stuff, I never thought I was ever going to go over to Iceland. I never thought I was going to go after a 418-pound stone and walk at 50 meters. That's what I'm saying. So anything you're doing, do it with the idea of learning, of being the best you can be at it, because you know something? You might be a guy like Rob that can yank 600 pounds off the ground as a 19-year-old, or you might be a guy like me that wants to go over and take the biggest challenge of his life, the biggest manhood stone in the world. So what we're trying to convey to you today are these three lifts, there's no losing in it other than if you do it incorrectly and hurt yourself. Otherwise, what can't you do? I mean, you build a structure off those three. Say you know, look at Paul Anderson, squat guy. That guy could lift a mountain, all right? The point I'm making here is this. There's no lose in any of these lifts. These lifts prepare you for anything you want to do down the road. So give them a try, right, Rob? I mean.
Yeah, you know what? I guess the last thing I'll say about these lifts is this. If you work these hard over really any length of time, they build a foundation that it's the kind of muscle that sticks around. You know, that they and it's very true. You know this because I'm sure you've seen it. The guys that build themselves up on heavy squats, benches, and deadlifts, they can get sick. They can get hurt or you know, some of them might lose interest and they spend months, some of them years away from the sport. But they always retain a thick athletic build, and that is not true of, you know, people who use isolation movements and pump type movements. It's probably outside the context of this discussion, but you know, it's sarcoplasmic and myofibrillar hypertrophy. Sarcoplasmic hypertrophy is the muscle grows by light weights and pumps a lot of blood and fluid in there. You know, myofibrillar hypertrophy comes about by lifting heavy weights over long periods of time, and it's the actual thickening of muscle fibers, and that's why it's the kind of muscle that sticks around.
Absolutely, and it's that caveman look, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like you know, I noticed too. I'll tell you one thing: when I was the first time, and I still notice it. Once I get very heavily into lifting that Hoosa Steel Stone, Rob, is this. You seem to grow everywhere, and I mean, I've been lifting for decades now, and if you read any of the studies, that's impossible. Well, I'm telling you right now, I think my head grew too. It seems like any time you go out, especially when you're fighting the elements such as high heat like now, or excessive cold or snow, it seems to have a metabolic effect where your body grows. It gets thicker. You look denser, and obviously, you're going to eat, you know, that's going to dictate, you know, what you're feeding yourself. But, you know, I've told people this before. I could take somebody that's been an athlete in relatively good shape, you know, but like we were just saying, maybe you've been out of, say, 5 years. I would make this pledge to you. I could train you on stones out there, and I don't mean starting with a big one. I'm talking no more than maybe a 50-pound stone. And if you stuck with it and believed in it, it could get you in the best shape of your life, man.
Yeah.
I mean, because look, you can press a stone, you can deadlift a stone, you can squat a stone. And not only that, the effect of cleaning a weight off the ground like we were talking about, learning how to support it, learning how to move with it. You know, it's an object really that's not made to be lifted. It's, you know, so, you know, you can't say enough about anything that you got to pull, press, you know, or push. There's nothing out there like it. And you can do all the, you know, you can do the machines, you can do preacher curls, you know, you can sit there and pump your arms till they look like they're going to explode. But you look at these guys and later they're down to nothing, you know, with a good, strong frame and body, like you said, they could be out of the game for 5 years, maybe some are out of it 10 years, but they've always got that look of power. And most of these people don't let themselves go. I mean, granted, they might not be all built up, but you're not going to see a guy or a gal with a big, huge belly, not unless they've just fallen off the wagon. So for them to get in shape, it's a hell of a lot better. And, you know, maybe it's better for them the second time around. Myself, I'm a big believer in this. Unless you got it, don't ever stop doing it, because I think it's not so much the physical aspect. I think you end up giving out mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think I've seen it happen to guys that were very good lifters for one reason or another, whether it was marriage or personal or family or whatever. Well, yeah, I'm going to come back. I say, yep. And then you see him maybe 3 or 4 years later. Well, I tried it. I got hurt. But it's not the same. You don't hear it in the voice anymore. You don't hear that lust for it anymore. And I think once you neutralize that within, you know, that enthusiasm, that, you know, where it is something that you need to get back to. You know, it becomes that important. It's almost like a life and death thing. When you can no longer do that mentally, it's all over for you.
Yeah. Amen. Amen.
Well, all right, Rob. Before we sign off, are you all set? We got everything we want.
Well, just as a reminder, we were talking about Tranquilogen the other day.
Yeah.
The 15% off sale is still going on. If you go to CoachRobRegish.com, click on the Tranquilogen icon there, and you enter the discount code 15-4TQ, you get 15% off. And even if you're buying Synthogen and you're curious about Tranquilogen, just type in the notes section, TQ sample. Mass is going to send you 6 caps of Tranquilogen, which are going to, you know, it's going to do a good job in telling you whether it does what we say it does or not. But finally, and most importantly, I'll say this, and this just came to mind. We talked here today about the big three, about how to use them effectively to build a base that will carry you for the rest of your life. We talked about form. We talked about the hip belt squat. Mm-hmm. All of that is, and 5x5, all of that is contained in the Blueprint 2.0, which just so happens to be on sale. I usually sell that for $47, but it's out there for $7 right now.
Wow.
So if you're interested in reading more about not only the fundamentals, but loading patterns that will carry you far beyond 5x5, you know, do get it.
Yeah, and not only that, like Rob was talking 5x5, you know, for any of you guys that don't know about that, if you're fans of anybody like Reg Park, he was big 5x5. He wrote a book about it in the 60s. I mean, you look at his physique, thick as a brick, thick as could be. Rob, let's get all your information out, too. I mean, now, before we go, too, obviously, I know that we talked about Tranquilogen has been somewhat a little bit more updated, correct, too?
Yeah, Mass does a nice job maximizing the actives, which is to say, and they don't bark very loud about it, but this batch that we have in stock right now is being referred to as, you know, second generation. And essentially what that means is the curcumin and the rhodiola, the actives in those two herbs in particular, are a lot stronger. So I'm hearing from guys that are usually, you know, they're usually used 3 caps a day. They're able to get away with using 2. Synthogen is what it is. It's the big boy. You know what it's like. It's recovery in a bottle, literally.
Well, I told Rob, I've been doing things a little bit different. We're going to talk about this after I feel we are with it. We got a little different protocol I'm doing, and I can tell you, it's probably been about 5 days, and I'm already starting to have success with it. And we're going to talk a little bit because I've been banged up a little here, and we're going to run a full bottle on Rob's protocol. And I hope by the middle of the end of next month, we're going to have some great results for you. I'm trying to think too. There's something. Oh, here's a good thing too. Rob, I don't know if you heard us last week. We did a show on hip belt squatting. We were talking about the lower back and the legs. And we announced last week, and Rob even got something through Facebook from Jeff Bankins. I put a video up this week. I don't know if I even told you, Rob. It's got him doing the hip belts with 450.
I saw it. He posted.
He's a monster, man.
Yeah.
He's a riot. And, you know, once again, that was your tutelage, you know, via the show. And Rob and I have done a number of podcasts together. You can either go to FiorelloBarbellCo.com or we're out on iTunes and Stitcher. So, you know, if you want to go through and listen to some of the previous shows that Rob and I have done, they're spectacular. You know, Rob is a regular here on Thursdays and normally Fridays. Just this Friday, I have a family connection coming in, so we're probably not going to do one unless we can do one very early tomorrow. If not, we will go back to our regular stuff the following week. But you know, Rob, we're getting out to people, and this is good. And why don't you give everybody your website? Obviously, you know, what's coming up in the coach's diary here, and take it away.
Yeah, it's CoachRobRegish.com. Like I said, right now we've got a great special up for the Blueprint 2.0. It's normally $47, giving it away for $7. We've got that discount on Tranquilogen, and for a little less than a day, the Blueprint Army promotional, way discounted rates on getting access to the vault, which includes over 100 Blueprint Power Hours on Superhuman Radio, a searchable database, every single Blueprint bulletin ever written. So you get the past issues on top of, you know, discounts on upcoming products and services. The Blueprint Army's growing, and, you know, whether it's a single piece of information like one of my special reports or a full-blown Blueprint Army member, we'd love to have you. Absolutely.
Rob knows his stuff, obviously, you can tell. And like I said, Rob's authentic. He wouldn't be with us if not, and we're very glad and honored to have him. Rob, you got anything else you want to you got that webinar coming up, right? Why don't you tell everybody about that if you can?
We do have a third webinar in the works, and it's going to be about hormone optimization. It's going to include testosterone, free testosterone, growth hormone, and, of course, cortisol, and how to balance all that. So I'm guessing it's going to be pretty popular.
I think that's going to be very popular because, you know, that seems to be the focus with a lot of people. Plus, you know, whatever you're going to get into, but we all know about estrogens, how they're in our foods and plastics, all that. And, you know, that's like death for a man. I mean, you have to have estrogen, but not to the degree it's in males now. So, I mean, is there anything else you got, Rob?
No, it's actually I got to get going to pick my son up from camp.
Okay.
But, you know,
okay, well, I'm going to go real quick here. This is Fiorello Barbell Company. We are www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We are on Facebook, obviously. We're on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. We got a big announcement. It's coming out in 2 weeks, but I'll tell you the name of it. It's called The Wait Is Over Fast. This is going to be the big DVD / MP4 digital that had Dennis on. Dennis lost 43 pounds with us here at FBC. He went from 267 to 224, and presently he's at 222, and we're working on another big project with him for the end of the year. Rob and I will have this up posted tomorrow on FBC and obviously the other two, Stitcher and iTunes. And we got a big show next week. So Rob's got to get rolling, so we'll sign off. So this is Eric Fiorello for Rob Regish. We want to thank you for listening to the show. If you've got any pros or cons about the show, you know how to get a hold of Rob. I forgot to give you my email, but it's Fiorello Barbell at NICAP.RR.com. Don't be a stranger. We got almost 2,000, a little over 2,000 downloads. We want to hit 10,000. We're looking to get real, real big and give you everything we got. So we'll say goodbye for now. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Motivation and Muscle, the best podcast connecting your brain to your broad.